comes. Bucky's Auto Service Centers bring you the next hour of the Tom and Curly Show. They're throwing caution to the wind, Tom. They have no idea what we're going to talk about. They know how to fix your car. Bucky's Auto Service Center! We were doing the Ron and Don show yesterday.
Yeah,
what
was that like?
The entire time. And I missed. Yesterday was a gorgeous day. I was inside all day. I saw not one moment of the sunshine. It was odd.
Well, you'll have plenty of time to miss it today.
There is no sun. All right. By the way, did you know that we're going to talk about your Amazon device? We won't call it what it is normally called.
Okay.
People get mad. Okay.
Gotcha.
We're going to call it the Amazon device. True or false, Tom? The Amazon device in your house records and stores everything you say to it.
False. Must be false.
It is true.
It is true.
Yes, yes.
Say it ain't so.
I'm sorry. Especially hear it from me. It holds it all and stores it not in the device, but in a server. True or false, Tom, you can access that server and delete everything you have ever told the device.
Oh, true. It must be true.
Unfortunately, Saint say false.
Oh, false. No, you cannot.
Ah-ha-ha!
It's there for all time.
No, you can't get in and you can listen to everything you've ever asked. Hey, play something from Hall & Oates. And then it plays it, right? So you can hear your own voice giving the commands to
you
the
can?
Device. Yes.
So it stores those secret information. My password is, you could then track it down from your A device.
Yeah. Alexa,
that could be helpful.
Explain this rash. So you get all of it. You get it all. We said it. We said it. By the way, you just said the word.
Oh, no.
Oh, shoot. Okay. Well, anyway, it's all there. So here's the question. Can the stuff that's being stored accidentally be leaked to somebody else that is not in your family or in your house? Can somebody hear some of it?
Well, apparently only on the rarest of occasions.
My husband and I would randomly joke sometimes, I bet these devices are listening to what we're saying.
Until recently, Danielle's home was completely wired up in every room with the Amazon Echo. Her family used the Alexa app to do everything from turn up the heat to turn off the lights. But Danielle told us via Skype that 2 weeks ago, their love for Alexa changed with an alarming phone call.
Everybody listening to the show right now's device just turned up the heat and turned on the lights. Sorry about that, everybody. Okay, back to Cairo 7.
The person on the other line said, unplug your Alexa devices right now.
That person was one of her husband's employees calling from Seattle.
We go around and unplug them all. He proceeded to tell us that he had received audio files, recordings from what was going on in our house.
Danielle says her Amazon device in her Portland home recorded a private conversation and sent that recording to a random contact, which happened to be the employee in Seattle.
At first, my husband was like, no, you didn't. And he's like, you're sat there talking about hardwood floors. And we're, oh gosh, you really did.
Danielle listened to the conversation and she couldn't believe someone 176 miles away heard it too.
I felt invaded, total privacy invasion. Immediately I'm like, I'm never plugging that device in again. I can't trust it.
Ha-ha. So this is amazing. So first off, though, because I don't have one of these Echo devices, everything that you say is recorded?
Yeah, so it turns on. You would say, hey, and then you'd ask it to do something, and it records it. And here's why Amazon...
And then it stays on?
Yeah, here's why.
Okay.
Amazon says, we want to be able to better serve you. So we want to be able to hear your voice and know how you speak and just be there to make it more efficient for you.
So wait,
that's why we record everything that you say.
So Amazon has access to your pillow talk, John Curley. Is that true?
If you activate the device, and there was a bug in the original one, which they found out about, where it would continue to record even after you said, hey, A,
yeah.
What's the weather tomorrow?
Yeah.
And then they think, the weather tomorrow is partly sunny and 68 degrees.
And then
it would stay on.
Yes.
Okay. Well, now Amazon said we fixed that. So that after you ask the thing, it turns itself back off again.
Okay. But apparently not in this case, because I doubt if they said, hey, Echo device.
Yeah.
We want to talk about hardwood floors, so why don't you give us some advice, and then we'd carry on with this conversation, because that's what this private conversation was. So that's the first disconcerting thing about this story. Okay. But the more disconcerting thing is that they're sending this randomly to somebody in your contact list.
Yes.
Through no instruction of your own.
Yeah. And listening in on somebody talking about hardwood floors.
I mean, thank God it was only hardwood floors.
Was that a sort of a nomenclature for something else?
Yes. What you do on a hardwood floor? I don't know. But still, that's pretty disconcerting. And so Amazon, at least according to this story, says, oh, yeah, that's very rare and we're looking at it. But they don't explain how it could happen, why it happened, and how not to have it happen.
All right, let's see. A teacher, this is in the UK, asked a bunch of 7- and 8-year-olds to name something they wish had never been invented. Name something you wish had never been invented. 20% of them wrote it down or looked right at the teacher and all agreed the one thing they wish was never invented, Tom.
The cell phone.
That's right.
And this is a perfect kind of illustration of the dangers of cell phones in interpersonal relationships. We've talked about this, you know, in all different scales. Normally, it's people like us, it's the parents who sort of say, oh, these kids today, they're ruined by their social media. They're always on their phones. The screens are dominating their life. This is an interesting example of turning the tables. Yeah, parents find it easy to condemn their kids for not being sociable enough. Here is the turnabout is fair play. Kids, and again, these are young, relatively innocent kids, 7 and 8, say that's the worst thing about mommy and daddy is that they're always on their phones. And I think that's a good kind of a, you know, sort of a rejoinder to all of us who think, yes, that, well, we have important things to do on the phone, not to the kids.
Right. There's a study that was done. Put down the mobile phone. Babies need real life FaceTime. And then for every time that the kid is looking up at you and asking you a question and you're looking down at your phone, you're missing that opportunity to make that connection. And especially when they're really young and those synapses are firing in the brain, it's eye contact that's essential. And then the other thing is parents give the kid the iPad to play with. And they said funny little cartoons and games, that's not as important as the parent sitting with the child, looking right into their eyes, not putting them in front of the television set, but actually having facial expressions change with emotions and words. It's essential. So if parents, at least smart parents, if you said, hey, every time you have your cell phone in your hand and your baby is within 5 feet of you, you're reducing your child's IQ by 2 points or whatever it is. Whatever the thing.
Yeah. Okay.
Then parents would be like, oh, my God.
Yes.
Right? Then you would see that because everybody loves their kids and it would then put your phone away. But you see it all the time, especially you walk around Green Lake. Yeah. All the moms that are walking around with their kids in the stroller and they're on their phones and the kids talking. Like, oh, look at this. Look at that. And the mom's like, Yeah.
Now, I do think, to be fair to the parents on this one score, I raised my kids before cell phones were so ubiquitous.
Yeah.
But I do have to, my kids, and I had two daughters, and they would be playing perfectly fine on their own or doing something. But whenever any either pager I got on the phone, this is like an old-fashioned landline on the phone, they would suddenly see that as a threat, and they'd start pestering, hey, mommy, daddy, hey, I want this, I want that. I go, I'm on the phone for 2 minutes. There's something about when the kids know. The kids don't have a problem if you're in the kitchen and you're, you know, cooking or making a sandwich or something. But when they see a phone in this is not just a cell phone. They see you on the phone, they suddenly realize, oh, they're not paying any attention to me, and they're paying attention to somebody else. So it might be, that's a difficult thing to negotiate
that
with your
really
kid.
Brings back great memories.
It does.
Yeah, because there was a big yellow phone that hung on the wall and had a really, really long cord.
Yeah, exactly.
And I remember when my mom would be on it, she would have it, and she could walk all around the kitchen with it, and I would go over and grab on it.
You would.
Right, and like bite on it and stuff and hang on it.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it's like, you're right, because I was no longer a primary focus.
Exactly, and it's when there's a focus on something else. So there's something about the phones themselves. But you're on your cell phone 100 times more than you're on your landline phone, if you even still have a landline phone.
So be more careful. And it is, I think it's sort of sad that the kids. Now, I would say of the 7- and 8-year-olds, I don't know how many kids actually came up with it on their idea on their own. And other kids jumped on board the bandwagon. Because, you know, you get a little blank. You know, can you, one kid goes, cell phone. And the other, yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one.
Cell phone.
I'm with
Bobby on that one, the cell phone.
The problem with this story, because I love the story, is
what other things can they think of that was invented?
No, that's what I want. What were 80% of them said something other than the cell phone? What would be invented?
The cotton gin. Eli Whitney's cotton gin. I mean, how many people can name any inventions?
Exactly. So anyway, I mean, that's the one thing that's lacking in the story, but still. Cautionary note.
This story has been kicking around for a while. Can Donald Trump, can the president of the United States, can he block people on Twitter based on their political views? Now, as the president of the United States, he is an elected official. 63 million Americans can't be wrong. And is he...
More than once.
By the way, I saw a Democrat say that he's going to win again in 2020.
Yeah, I think that's the concern.
Is it a concern that the American people then again vote for the guy?
Yes, absolutely.
So I thought we are the government. You like democracy.
We are, well, I mean, I like democracy, but it doesn't
mean it's
perfect. When
you win, you like democracy.
No.
Oh, yeah.
Listen, it's the...
Hey, if he wins again, the people have had
Winston Churchill. No, it's because he's so polluted the political landscape,
right,
that he could get elected again.
The people are so dumb, danger. They're going to vote for him again.
Yeah, or they may respond to his lies as if they're true. We're getting to right here.
Uh-oh, that's okay. Right. So the president blocked a couple of people that were on Twitter that
I
were following
at
him.
Least seven.
Yes.
There may be more. At least seven brought this case. And a federal district judge just ruled that, no, you can't do that. If you're, Trump's Twitter account is a public forum, and so mm-hmm. because of that, you cannot block people from saying things, even if they disagree with you. Mm-hmm. You always have the option of not looking at it and not responding, but you can't block them. Now, this is just a district court judge, and they said the White House is considering what its next steps are, but... For the most part, I think this seems a reasonable thing. If you're going to have a public forum account, if you have a Twitter account, then that allows for people to respond to it. If you don't, I mean, I don't know how many other presidents had a Twitter account. I assume Barack Obama did, but it wasn't it was a big...
It was mostly pictures of himself.
Yeah, well, I imagine, or high, kind of boring, probably, official proclamations.
No, mostly Trump pictures of himself. Pictures of himself standing in front of a monument. And why not? It's true. Did you ever follow him?
No, I never. Believe me.
Oh, yeah. Lots of photos.
Well, the thing is, what do you expect on a Twitter account? Do we expect, offhanded comments like Trump's?
Yes.
Oh, you do, huh?
Why not? Hey, listen.
Fine. That's good. I'm glad he does it because then he can get people responding to his tweets fashion.
He jumps right past the media. He's able to get out some of his crazy ideas.
That's right.
And you get a chance to get out there and he invents words like Spygate. And then he's able to drive political points home. The media hates it because then 60, I don't know how many people follow him on Twitter.
No, media love it.
Well, they do love
it. It is the best
news stuff.
News
they chums the water for them.
Exactly. Right. Every morning at 4 o'clock, I saw there's somebody on the beat at the Washington Post whose beat is starting at 3 in the morning to start monitoring the president because you never know how early he's going to get up and tweet. They've had to create a new position.
The president has just said that he will be posthumously pardoning the boxer, the first black heavyweight champion. That's right, Jack Johnson. Who was convicted in 1913, Tom, by an all-white jury of violating the Mann Act, in which he had transported a woman across state lines for immoral purposes. So that was in 1913. So the president now responding by pardoning him. So there you go.
That's
one more reason to vote for him. Right, look at that. It's right up there. CNN's got it. See that, huh? Basically securing the black vote because of that. A lot of people are still raging about Jack Johnson being convicted of it, the Mann Act.
Well, I think the president can relate to the immoral purposes aspect of the
conviction. You know what? That's just mean and despotic. Sandy Hook families are fighting.
A Twitter account.
Families in Sandy Hook are fighting for the truth, suing a conspiracy theorist. I don't understand how this can be put out onto the airwaves and have enough dumb people believe it. Alex Jones.
Hey, 63 million people can't be wrong.
You know, 63 million people believe Alex Jones when Alex Jones says this about Sandy Hook.
The whole thing is a giant hoax. And the problem is, how do you deal with a total hoax? I mean, how do you even convince the public something's a total hoax? Sandy Hook is a synthetic, completely fake, with actors, in my view, manufactured. I couldn't believe it at first. I knew they had actors there, clearly, but I thought they killed some real kids. And it just shows how bold they are that they clearly used actors. All I know is the official story of Sandy Hook has more holes in it than Swiss cheese.
So you have to believe that the government is creating conspiracies to direct people's attention and get laws passed based upon sort of rabble-rousing. And so he fires back with, don't follow this, because what this is a gun grab. They've made this whole thing up. This kid's never got shot and killed. The whole thing's a lie, because it's going to give the government the impetus to come after your guns.
Yes, and if you don't think that's crazy enough, he was convinced the 9/11 thing was an inside job on the government's part. I mean, this guy knows no shame and knows no bounds to his... I mean, he was the guy, you know, promulgating the Pizzagate business.
He apologized for
Hillary
that,
Clinton. Yes, in a rare moment.
I got that one said, wrong. Yeah, I'm a little
Hillary
off
Clinton
on that
was not
one.
Running a child sex porn ring in a
out of a pizza parlor. Sorry about that.
I mean, this guy is just unhinged, and unfortunately, he has so much more traction now because Donald Trump appeared on his show and seemed to endorse this idea that the media is the enemy of the people, and Alex Jones is one of those people fighting the enemy of the people.
Yes.
And if, you know, the enemy of my enemy is my friend. It's we have something of an Alex Jones presidency, I'm afraid, and this is what makes it really disconcerting. However, I don't know that that means that they're going to win in court.
So here's the father of one of the kids that was killed. His son, Noah, was 6 years old at the time at Sandy Hook. Actually used to listen to Alex Jones and found him entertaining. Okay. But he says it went too far.
Well, now there's a cost to it. It's not a game anymore. Now it's quite personal. It's one thing to think about, you know, like Bigfoot or UFOs. And it's another thing to target actual, you know, victims.
So Mr. Jones will claim First Amendment protection from for his endeavors, but the lawsuit challenges that defense. So, quote, the First Amendment has never protected demonstrably false, malicious statements like the defendants. The suit is filed against Jones. It's also difficult for defamation cases are difficult to win. So here's the best part of it. The lawyers for the victims and the family will have to show that the statements were false statements of fact, not opinion, that Alex Jones was at least negligent in not taking necessary steps to get the facts right.
Yeah, see, the problem with this scenario is it's hard to win defamation cases because you have to establish that. We now, thanks to the constant hammering against the media, there are no journalistic standards that people expect or accept these days. You could say that if a reporter went on the air and said, you know, fact A, B, and C, but did not verify fact A, B, and C. Well, that is bad journalism.
Okay.
Now, he can say fact A, B, and C and not track it down. They go, well, you know, that's kind of the way news is. It's all fake news. Well, the problem is it isn't all fake news, but we now have such a diminished idea of the value of media that we think, yeah, well, yeah, you know, maybe there was an inside job. Maybe, you know, blowing up the Oklahoma City federal building was an inside job, just like Alex Jones says. How do we know it's not? You can't prove a negative.
But if he starts a sentence with, I feel that it was an inside job, I feel these guys were actors. So that's a feeling. He's stating his feelings about how he perceives the facts. So
yes.
You're receiving feeling, not fact.
That's
much harder to be able to prove in court.
Exactly. And that's that slippery slope, and it's dangerous. And I think the president does a lot of the same thing. Remember, Obama hacked the Trump Tower. Obama unmasked these people, Spygate. He says things, and he says, well, you know, a lot of people are saying, gets him off the legal hook. But
right.
It's like, but people tend to believe Alex Jones and the president.
63 million of us, Tom. Teaching boys not to stalk for love. Tom says there's some classic movie examples of this. Oh, boy. You going to bring movies into this?
Well, no. I mean, Andrew asked. We don't have to.
No, you can slip them in there.
Okay.
All right. We'll be right back.
Fool me once. Shame on you. If you fool me, we can't get fooled again.
Here we go. Muckleshoot Bingo is going to bring you the know-it-all quiz tomorrow. That's where we ask you to call in, get on the air with us, stay conscious for 8 minutes as we ask you 5 questions, the stories we've covered all week. Win fabulous prizes, including win a pair of 3-day tickets to Upstream Music Fest and Summit, Tom. That's right. June 1st through the 3rd in Seattle, featuring Miguel Jawbreaker. Oh, Miguel, comma, Jawbreaker. Oh, the Flaming Lips. I know those guys.
Oh, there you go.
Little Dragon and over 200 more artists. It's the UpstreamMusicFest.com. Get 2 tickets to go to that. How about
a little
that?
Too hep for us.
Okay. So we're going to try to handle two stories at the same time, talking about how teenagers interrelate and how they date or don't date anymore. Plus, also teaching boys not to stalk for love.
Yes. So BBC has this article, and it stems from one of the suspicions of the motivations for the Santa Fe shooter. It was what? There was a girl that he had pestered for about 4 months, asking her to go out, and she kept saying no. And so finally, one week before the shooting, she finally said, listen, enough is enough. Leave me alone. Mm-hmm. That girl was one of the 10 victims of his shooting. According to the girl's parents, it sounds like she was the first one that was shot. Again, we don't have any evidence to back that up or to challenge that, but it just raised this idea that also dovetailed with some of these other shootings we've had that come out of the incel community, the involuntary celibate community, that a lot of boys feel like the way they should go around courting girls is to be insistent, that if they turn them down once, they should just do it again and again and again. This article suggests that one of the problems, pop culture and the whole thesis of so many romantic comedies is, you know, boy meets girl, girl rejects boy, boy sort of, you know, pesters the girl until she gives in, and then everyone's happy. And just, this is a dangerous cultural trope that we're all operating from. And that maybe we should try to explain to boys early on that when a girl says no, and a girl says, I don't want to date you, or I don't want to, be with you, that we acknowledge that and don't misinterpret, well, if I really loved her, I'm going to show I really love her by showing that she can turn me down and embarrass me so many times. I'm going to keep doing that. That is a version. That's what stalking is, and that's not an expression of love. And boys need to kind of learn to relent and say, okay. And
Dustin
and
Hoffman shows up at the church.
That's so funny. That's
you
exactly
have that
what
one?
I wrote down, The Graduate.
Hey!
First, yes.
Hey! He's pounding
Elaine,
on the glass.
Yes.
During
the
wedding.
Her wedding.
And then they turn. And
yes.
You have people with their lips going, you can't hear them.
Yep.
Elaine! And she turns and sees him, and then he runs downstairs, and they jump in the Alfa Romeo and drive off.
Exactly.
And they run out of gas.
And you think it's a happy ending. It's like, oh, yes, because we knew she really did love him. She just was going to marry this other person. And by the way,
But while we're talking about this.
Yes, okay.
Isn't it a great moment while they're on the bus, and because they've run out of gas, I'm going to ruin the movie. It's been out for a while now. That they realize at that point, like, what the hell are we doing?
See, I don't know.
I don't think they do. Oh.
No, you know what? And the reason I don't, this is perfect because, so this is going way back for a lot of our listeners, but Mike Nichols directed The Graduate.
Right, yes.
Elaine May and Mike Nichols used to be a comedy team.
Right.
So the next year, Elaine May made a movie called The Heartbreak Kid starring Charles Grodin, which is a fantastic movie itself. And that's all about a guy who's so insistent. It's Charles Grodin and the woman from Last Picture Show, Sybil Shepherd.
Okay.
And he finally, and she's resistant. He finally breaks through this. She's like this goddess to him.
Right.
And they get married. And the end of that movie is he's sitting at the wedding reception, like having caught, he's like the dog who caught the car.
Okay.
It's like, now what?
Uh-huh.
And it's like, it's sort of a rejoinder to the happiness that you might feel in The Graduate.
I see. Okay.
It's sort of like, then it kind of is, well, now what do I do? Well, the problem is that all of those movies tend to always celebrate the stalker because he's really in love, and we know that they're going to meet cute, and they need to end up. And so boys may think that this is the way you go about it, and
so
it's
you get
damaging.
A boom box, and you stand out in front of her house
exactly.
And say anything, and you hold it up there and stuff.
Yes.
So that is one part of what's happening in the dating world. That's an incredibly aggressive tact by the boy to get the girl. I looked up, why don't kids date anymore? I've got teenagers, and they don't date. I said, are you guys dating? No. Were you just your friends, and then you may be a thing, but if you date, you're weird. And here's the reason why girls don't date.
Okay.
Because there are now written, recorded either videos or things that are said back and forth that can be shared. Think of the number of times when you were a kid, you would call up the girl on the phone. Of course, the mother would answer, the father. That was the worst part.
Yes.
Is Katie there?
Right, yeah.
Okay. Then you'd get on the phone. Now, there was no recording of it. So you could expose your intimacy and sure. say something nice. Yeah. I really like you. And she says, yeah. oh, I really like you too. Now, because everything is recorded and everything can be possibly shared with somebody else, nobody wants to reveal themselves emotionally to anybody else because there would be a written record, a recorded record of it. So people keep all of those feelings inside. So there's nobody wants to be seen as a fool. So there is no one sort of extending themselves and possibly being rejected. So the girls are going all the way through high school having not dated anybody. And when they get to college, if they're in a social situation, they don't know how to pick a good boy from a bad boy. They don't even know how to begin to interact. They don't even know what a healthy relationship looks like. 38% of kids in 2013 said they have never dated.
Okay. And what percentage of teenagers or high school students haven't had sex?
That has dropped.
Now, that's the question I have, though, is when you say don't
date. But they're hooking
up.
There's a difference, Tom.
Yes, I know. That difference didn't exist in my era.
Right.
That the idea of dating, so what you're talking about is like actually going out like, you know, like a
asking somebody out.
Yes.
Right. So what happens is you text back and forth. You never actually have face-to-face contact. Mm-hmm. You text back and forth, and then you hook up.
Yeah, and by hooking up, you mean,
I mean
something sexual, something physical.
Yes, Tom.
Which is normally what we would consider dating in my generation.
But you went back and forth. You asked the person out on the phone. You went out and you dated. You went to the movies and stuff. And then a couple more dates. And then maybe you kissed them, and that was a big deal.
Yeah.
Right. I remember the most embarrassing thing that ever happened to me was there was a song from Grand Funk called Bad Time. Remember this song?
I don't know. I might recognize
it. Okay, you'll recognize it. And I was playing it, and I had got a recorder as well, so I could play music and sing along with it. That I'm talking about, I'm in love with a girl I can't live without. Right? My brother was in the other room, and he heard me doing this. I'm singing along
over the phone.
On a recorder.
I got you.
And I'm going, I'm in love with a girl I just met at camp. I'm in love with a girl I can't live without, right? Because I had met this girl at camp.
Yeah.
Right? So my brother sees me and waits quietly. I finish. He rushes in, grabs the cassette. And because we had one of these cassette things, you could record them both at the same time, he made a copy of it. And then, whenever he could, he would share it with whoever came over the house. And it was me singing, like, I'm in love with a girl I just met at camp. I'm in love. Oh, it was terrible.
And that's why you threw him into the motel room and held the door.
Whenever I could. Here we go, everybody. But I sure picked a bad time to be in love. Lisa Wolfington, her name is Lisa Wolfington. This one goes out to Lisa. I don't remember the words after this.
But you remember Lisa Wolfington.
Oh, yeah. Met her at camp.
And did she go out with you?
Not after that.
No, she married your brother.
I just made it camp. I'm in love with a girl. Oh, my God. Wow.
You just relived the most humiliating moment.
Oh, no, that wasn't the worst. I got a worse one than that. It happened at a James Taylor concert. Every time I hear Ursa talking about the carpet, I'm every time I went to look for a house 20-some years ago in Seattle. They had carpeting in the kitchen.
Really?
Oh, wow. Zero res. You'd be like, sorry. We're not doing that. Carpeting? What's worse, carpeting in the kitchen or carpeting in the bathroom? Andrew?
Yes.
To both.
Yes.
I don't want to offend any of our listeners that have their kitchen carpeted, but what the hell? All right. Tom, in France, they have decided, speaking of something dumb, in France, they've come up with an idea that they think is going to help women as they walk down the streets of France. And by the way, Australia is thinking of following the suit. This was a famous clip. It's hard to kind of hear, but we'll play it anyway. A woman decided she wanted to show what is it like to walk down the street of New York City. Mm-hmm. And she wasn't dressed necessarily in an immodest fashion, but she's just walking through a bunch of places with a bunch of guys that are sitting there eating sandwiches out of lunchboxes and...
Hey, baby.
had it wrong.
How are you, Simone?
Have a nice evening.
Nice. Damn.
God bless.
Sexy American Eagle.
Doing good?
Hey, look at that. $5,000.
The thing about watching the video is, as she's walking, these guys are coming within, like, you know, 16 inches of her, right? Yeah. They're walking by her, looking right at her, ogling, and then she walks past, and then they stop, like, woo, check you out.
Yeah.
Right. And it's demeaning. Yes. And, yeah.
I think that most of us can agree that's not something that we should encourage, that this probably is insulting in some way rather than the old take on it is, oh, come on, you know, it's a compliment. They like your looks, you know, this kind of stuff. I think it would be nice if that kind of behavior would end, just out of a sense of decorum or, you know,
well, have you ever in your life, or how many times have you ever said you want some fries to go with that shake? Tom, I want to know from you. How many times? Can you count?
Well, I'm going to write that down. That's a good line. No, never, John, never.
All right. Well, in France, they've decided they're going to put the kibosh to catcalling.
Well, first off, maybe. It's passed through the House level, and it's still being considered in the Senate, but they are considering catcalling being a penalizable crime.
So here is a French defense lawyer saying that France has changed immensely their attitudes towards sex crimes.
How much has France changed when it comes to this issue of sexual crimes?
It has changed a lot because 30 years ago, rape was not a crime. Rape became a crime in 81, not before.
What, it was a misdemeanor before?
Yes, it was an offense.
Tom's favorite country.
Wow.
Wow. Wow. But now things have swung too far, here she says.
Of course not. You can't put a policeman after each man.
She's responding to the fact that they're going to have a catcalling law that on the streets you're no longer allowed to catcall a woman. Can't say anything derogatory about her looks or it's something positive about her looks.
Okay. We need to kind of maybe set this up. Is she responding to that?
She says that, whether this new catcalling law will even work.
Yes.
Okay, so here we go.
Of course not. You can't put a policeman after each man. No, this is really what we call cosmetic. It's unusual. It's unuseful. It's just to make some associations happy and the women's minister happy, but it's really, it's stupid.
There you go.
Yeah. So at this point, it's being discussed. And there are people, they're arguing, no, this is the chivalry, the romance, this is the way of the French. How can you, you know, try to legislate this? And I said, no, but that's the bad side of France. We're trying to, secure real seduction. That's a good thing, not this kind of catcalling. They could be penalized from $105 to $877, but they say it's street harassment really is what they're after. So following a woman through several blocks, asking for phone number 15 times, this kind of stuff, it's most persistent. But ultimately, they say the people that are in favor of it, even if it's not enforceable, it the great thing is it's official disapproval of sexism in France, which they say is a start. And that's probably it. You see it as symbolic? That's okay. Good symbol.